today, I think it's the September 28th, we want to take up the last story in the series, The Tower of Babel, Genesis chapter 11, 1 to 9. Let me begin by saying that it really isn't a story. It isn't as long a story as the story we had when we took, say, the story of creation. It's only 9 verses. It isn't as long or as interesting a story as the story about the Garden of Eden. That's 2 chapters long, chapters 2 and 3. It isn't as long a story as the one about the deluge. That's 3.5 chapters. It is longer than the one we had about the sons of the gods and the giants. That was only 4 verses. Well, it was such a nasty story, he told it and got rid of it. But this is basically a contrast between the way things were when I grew up in northern Wisconsin and everything was united, and I went to school, and all the teachers said kind of the same thing, not like today where some teacher says this and some teacher says that. And all the politicians in that little village said, even though they were some of them Democrats and some Republicans and some farm labor and some La Follette people, they said basically the same thing. And the churches, they were Catholic and Lutheran churches, they basically said the same thing. It was a nice unified world. Then I grew up and I found out that there were other nations that had other values and didn't have the same language and the same concepts and so forth, and it was quite different. So what you have here is the unity and the disunity of the human race. And I think people ask why. And the answer of this story is that God has made us have the bitter medicine of living in disunity. And I'm going to take this over here so that I can see everybody here. Look them in the eye. Which is a terrible sort of thing, that God intervened. It starts off with the wonderful statement, once upon a time, the people had one language and one vocabulary, one value system. Isn't that nice? They could understand one another. And I think that was natural. It's kind of a utopian. You think God wants us that we should have different languages and different value systems? And to think of a man who is sitting over here thinking of Liberia, these tribes, each tribe wanting to have independence and each group wanting to have their language be the main one and their culture be the main one. According to this, the Creator liked northern Wisconsin, the town I grew up in, Black Creek, and liked that unity, and it was a good thing, and Ralph Gehrke still likes that was a good place to grow up. I think I would be as just good a human being if I had grown up in Manhattan and had all kinds of different, or maybe I better say L.A., that's even more knocked apart but I suppose even in L.A. you grew up first in your own home, don't you? And in your own family, in your own neighborhood. And then you finally get to know other things round about. And here the story says, why is it? And can anybody tell me, why is it that we live in disunity? No longer in the God-given unity that God would like for us?
Thanks for growing.
Pardon?
Thinking
and growing. Mm-hmm. And it also keeps us from imagining that we can control this world and that we can idolatrize our own achievements That's what you have here. And it's, I think, a master story, a marvelous master story, to help us understand the world in which we live. Well, having said that, let's take our Bibles. We have more time today because we don't have so much to go over. And we can read. And we'll start way in the back row this time. Alice, would you mind reading at chapter 11, verse 1?
Now the whole earth had one language and few words.
Few words. That's a little odd translation. I don't think it's as good. I think one vocabulary. You see that? They didn't have the multiplication of all different languages and so forth that we have today. And since a language, linguistic philosophers even say that, shapes. When we're young children, we learn that. We grow tremendously. Our brain begins to grow when we have languages and all that. That's our value system. And we get that from society, isn't it? My view of human beings is that we, of all the creatures that God has on earth, are very fragile. And we're very, very weak. And we have potentialities. But heavens, the birds and the animals, don't they mature very quickly and find their place? Know how to sing and know how to mate and know how to do everything. And what about us? We have a long childhood and we're dependent upon first mother and family. We're dependent upon society. We're dependent upon the outside. I think we're religiously dependent upon God from the beginning. The idea that the commies had and the Marxist philosophers had, that religion is just the opiate of the people and its wishes, people want to have it that way so they invent God. No, I don't think so. I think we are basically that type of creatures, that we are open to the outside. We have to be open, and that's the way we are. And when we get to be, a week from today I'll be 71. When we get to be 70 and almost 71, we still aren't there, as we all know, isn't it? We're dependent upon the outside. I think that's it. And so here we have something here that is remarkable, that human beings, once upon a time, there was unity. Now, we all know this is utopia. There never was a time that things were the way the Bible describes them here. But when the Bible is describing is what is really the case in everything that ever did happen, that is happening, and that ever will happen. That's why I like to call all these stories prototypical. So, if you would like to nail this down to the year 2224, when the fourth member in the next genealogy is also mentioned in chapter 10, Peleg, and his word means split, when nations split and they were scattered from each other, you can do that. But then you've also got to say the world's 4,004 years old. And I think it's a lot bigger than that to see that. So people have tried to scientificize this and to nail it down, whereas I think what you have here, I'll repeat that, it's rather provocative, but I think you have that much confidence in me to at least listen. This tells me a story about things that never just happened that way, but it tells us about what was really happening and all that did happen in ancient times. And it still happens with humans in relationship to God in modern times, and that will happen as long as there are human beings. And that's why I call these master stories and prototypical master stories. They're not just kind of history. Some of you were here when we talked about that. They're not just our type of history. Our type of history, we have to have what? Eyewitnesses or contemporary people who tell us about it. And this is not a story that these people wrote down, you see that, or it was written by Noah or Noah's son Shem or someone like that. These are remembered histories, and you can't even call it the sagas and things like that. It's a different type of literature. But if we listen to it, it's certainly God's word inspired by the Holy Spirit, but it's a different type of story than we ordinarily would have. And that's why the contrast here is between, first of all, the unity that was the wholesome condition of humanity once upon a time, certainly in God's will, and potentially even now, and the disunity, the bitter medicine that keeps humanity human, that we don't get a nail in our head and exceed our limits. And then it's a contrast, and I put this in two different colors, between proud humanity's heaven-directed enterprise, building this tower, and then the Lord's earth-directed countermeasures, the last part. Alice, you have to read the next verses, verses 2, 3, and 4. Would you do that, please?
And as men migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth.
All right. I think it's a kind of a clear story. Now, when the population grows, they migrate, they come from the east, and they come to a land which was quite different than Palestine. Palestine is rocky, limestone. And they come here to a plain of Shinar. That's the plain of Babylon, modern Iraq, between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. It's alluvial plain. That means that if you find even a pebble, you know that that stone has been brought in from the outside. But they were building big buildings, and the Palestinians were amazed. They built great big, they call them ziggurats, big towers, temple towers. And how did they build them? They invented what?
Brick.
Mm-hmm. And burned them, and they become kiln-made, you see that? And they're almost like stone, isn't it? And instead of having mortar, they have what to hold them together?
Bitumen.
So, and they have big, and that amazed the Israelites, you see. By the way, it's not so far from Palestine over to Baghdad. If you walked at night when it's not so hot, you could make it within a month. It's not all that far. And the people did travel more than we think. They didn't have buses and all that sort of stuff. So, and they when they came back, they told about it, see? So they said, look, when the people came there, they built a great tower. Now, tell me, what's the purpose of this tower? They not only have the technological breakthrough of bricks to build it, but, and it's not just a tower, it's a city connected with the tower, isn't it? It's a whole system. Everything is united. It's one language, one nation, one people, one system of values, and they say, come, let us build ourselves a city, a tower with its top in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered in the face of the earth. So what are the, there are three purposes for the tower. What is it? First purpose is what?
They're building a city with this reaching up to heaven.
Yes, its top is in the heaven. Now, I had to look it up in Hebrew. Have you ever seen a Hebrew Bible? No. I thought I'd better... I didn't bring this around for you. This is just Genesis in Hebrew. Yeah, this is what it looks like. Why don't you kind of look around and see what it looks like.
You sure do that?
It's an easy one rather than carrying a big one around, and I thought, well, I'll bring that along. There are others we have some in the library here too.
Yeah, rainbow coins.
Yeah, you have to start at the back. Yeah. But, so the first thing is, and the translation is precisely correct here in the RSV, its top will be in heaven.
Confusion of language.
Pardon?
Confusion of language so they couldn't understand them.
Yes, mm-hmm. And a second thing is they don't want to be scattered abroad and lose continuity with one another and have different languages nobody can understand. Lest we be scattered abroad, see? And another thing is, what's another purpose? Let us make a
name
for ourselves, yes. They'll be remembered forever and ever for building. this tower. Now, this is a picture by a Renaissance artist called Bruegel, the elder. He had a son who was also an artist, but this is the elder. And of the Tower of Babel, I just found this in our library. Actually, he made two pictures. This is the early picture. The second picture is also very good. You may have seen pictures like this, haven't you? Mm-hmm. His second one is extremely good, and it's in the Prado in Spain, in Madrid. And it pictures, it's very well done, that the top goes up through the clouds, you see? And it's a little off-center, and it hasn't quite completed. In fact, if you look at all the various stories down below, they've not been completed, and they'll never be completed. And in his version of it, he has another interpretation, it's not part of the Bible here, that there are people swarming about it, working at it, but they never are bringing it completed, and it will never be completed. There's a king, and that king is Nimrod. He's the tyrant. And according to their interpretation, the Bible doesn't say a thing about it, is that the people who built this were not the Semites. They were nice. And they never lost their language. Hebrew was the oldest language. That's never been changed. Adam spoke Hebrew. And that's the Semitic language, what you got there. That's Hebrew. Why, you guys want to really learn the Word of God, you got to learn Hebrew. My students asked the rabbi when I took them there, why do you have it in Hebrew? He said, that's because God gave us the revelation in Hebrew, and if you want to learn it, you better learn Hebrew. And that's why we still have Hebrew. And they said this tyrant, Nimrod, persuaded the Japhethites and his own people, the Hamites, to build this tower. The Semites didn't build it, and their language was never changed. That was their idea. And at the bottom of that picture in Madrid, you don't have it here, you have some people here, you have all kinds of people falling before that tyrant, because he is a tyrant, there's no question. So maybe sometimes an artist can picture it. Now, I don't think that the people who told this story thought that they could actually climb into heaven. It's obviously this city is not going to be completed, and its name is going to be called, the tower is going to be called Babel, which means in Hebrew confusion. So it should be the capital of the United World. And instead of that, it's going to end up uncompleted, and they're going to call it and make fun of the Babylonians, Confusion City. Because that's the word for Babel. There's kind of a pun in that. We're trying to get at it. But coming back to the text here, they've made this breakthrough, and now they are going to make a name for themselves. They're going to be like God and penetrate into his realm. Let me quote here from my notes here. From Isaiah chapter 14, where the king of Babylon is pictured by the prophet Isaiah as saying this in chapter 14, verse 13, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. See, they are just on the firmament, but above that is the heavens of heavens. That's where he wants to go. I'll set my throne. I'll sit in the assembly in the far north. I'll ascend above the heights of the clouds. I'll make myself like the Most High. So he's going to go there. And I think that's really the main thing. Now, was it wrong for these people to burn bricks?
No.
Is it wrong for us to have spaceships?
No.
Or Galileo telescopes? I just come back with some new stuff today, or the other day. I don't think so. Is it wrong to build a city?
No.
And a tower?
No.
No. What's wrong with them?
Their purpose.
Their motive.
Pardon?
Their motive.
Their motives, yes. Mm-hmm. And the motive is to?
Make a name for themselves.
Be like God. We'll have in the next section, I'm just going to quote it now, that when the God Well, he's got really fine ears, and he can really know what we're saying and thinking. He says, you know what they're saying? If we succeed like this, in this, nothing shall be withheld from us that we will not do. In other words, the sky's the limit. Isn't that the way it happens when we make breakthroughs, technological breakthroughs? Mm-hmm. When we sent a man to the moon? Well, first of all, when the Russians sent Sputnik up, and I think I quoted that the other day. What did they say? This is a moon not made by the God of the Old Testament. It's made in the USSR. But the Americans do the same sort of thing. Neil Armstrong was very nice when he stepped off the spaceship. He kind of muffled it, but what did he say? This is a small step for a man, but a great step for humanity. You know, that was really interesting. By the way, isn't that kind of nice? Neil Armstrong, I think he's a teacher somewhere. He's never made a mint, not 1 cent out of being the first man to step on the moon. Isn't that nice that there's some person like that? I think that's kind of nice. Most people would capitalize on that. And it's a bit sexist language. You should never say mankind in this day and age. It's you should say it what? This is a short step for a human, but a great step for humanity. And then the gals will all be happy. Excuse this male chauvinist, he's not quite housebroken yet. But, no, I'm teasing you gals here. but the point is that, what did Nixon say, our president, when he went out to meet the astronauts in the Pacific and greeted them? And they could hardly stand up, you know, they'd been weightless for all this time and hadn't quite used to their muscles all that time, but they finally got him. Don't you remember what he said? This was the greatest week in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And my mother, she always voted for Nixon. She said, no, he's wrong. Holy Week is the greatest week. God bless my mother. She understood in a wonderful way. But don't we do that when we make a breakthrough? We think now we've got the world by the tail. If we succeed in this, there shall nothing be withheld us that we won't do. Where in Genesis 1-11 you have something like that? Well, when they would eat of the apple, it was nice to look at, it was pleasant to the sight, and it would make you wise. And if you ate it, you could make up your own decisions, what is good for you and what is bad for you, and you didn't have to follow God's command, isn't it? And why in the world did he say that anyway? Can we not eat of every tree that's in the garden? And the woman says, yes, we can eat. We can eat of all it. We can play on it. We can jump on it. We can play swings on it. We can do anything. But we can't eat of that one tree in the middle of it. But God said we're going to die. And the serpent said, you won't die, but if you eat of it, you will know what is good for you. You will know everything from good to evil. You'll be conscious of everything the way God is. And we try to do that, isn't it? We try to be God. That's what the king, man of Babylon, the king of Babylon said here, I'll be like the Most High. I'll put my throne on heaven. I'm the Lord. Don't you remember what Hitler said when he won that battle over France in, I think, a month? He had mopped up Poland in the fall, and then in the spring he mopped up France, and he danced a jig, and he made the French generals come to that same wagon where they had signed the armistice in, was it 1918, and he danced a jig, and he said, jetzt haben wir das tausendjähriges Reich gegründet. Now we have established the millennium, the thousand-year reign, which the book of Revelation is for the Messiah, isn't it? And Hitler said, yes, there'll be blue-eyed, blonde people. People speak that way, don't they? You give them a little chance and they will go beyond their limits. And it's not only Hitler's and Nixon's, as Ralph Gehrke says, I don't know about you guys, but you know, this is the way humans are, that we would exceed our limits, isn't it? Now, are there some great projects that we sometimes have to have everybody together, the whole community, come, let us break bricks, let's make this city, everybody, one city, not scattered. We don't want our energy just dissipated. We want it all together. We want to have one value system. Well, what did JFK say? In that case, to beat the Russians. Before the end of the decade, we've got to have a man on the moon, isn't it? Congress voted it, and we went for it. And there are projects like that. Do you think there will be projects in the future? Bush would like to have the progress now in the Gulf War, that now that we don't have the Cold War, we will what? Make the United Nations work, and really work, the way it was supposed to be. and we all like to do that. And so I'm not just jumping on Bush, I'm jumping on Ralph Gehrke too. That this is the way humanity is. Is this a true picture of reality or not? Is it true or is it false? I think it's truer than what the paleontologists dig out of the earth. I don't say that that's untrue, you see that? But for us as human beings, I think that this is another, it can stand alongside of what the paleontologists tell us about the early world and about how we humans develop and all the rest of that. But I think this really describes us the way we are. This is truth. Human beings are what? Incorrigibly disobedient. Don't you know that some of the archangels told that to the Lord before he created us? When the Lord said he was going to make humans in his own image, giving them sovereignty, that they could make decisions, and going to give them dominion over this world he was going to create, one of the archangels threw up his hands in horror at that Oval Office meeting, the cabinet, and said, "Don't do it, Lord. If you do that, they'll ruin your whole creation." And that one who did is always the tester. The district attorney always has to see whether things are legal or not. His name is called in Hebrew Hosatan, the tester, the Satan. And according to the book of Job, he has a post in the cabinet. And that's the way that I'm hemming it up here a bit because you listen so well. The medieval theologian said, well, then the Lord said, but I still want to make a wonderful creation like that, and I'd like to have such creatures like that. And if they ruin it, and they don't just say yes, yes, but no, no. See, Satan would like us to be just puppets, and we would just say, yes, 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 Lord. But the Lord made us with freedom, and we can do say what? No. And we'll exceed our limits, and we'll be like God, and we'll eat the apple, even though he said you can't do it. And we'll make a city, and we'll not be scattered, and its type will be up in heaven. Well, anyway, according to that medieval theologian, the Lord was exasperated and finally said to the archangels, well, then you will have to help them, those creatures. And Satan said, not me. Non serviam. They talked Latin in those days in heaven. I will not serve. I won't serve. No one asked me to help those guys out. But God's own son said, serviam. And that's his motto ever since. I will serve. Now, what I just told you was a legend. You see that? A Christian legend, to try to explain how this works up in God's Oval Office when he makes it. But we're going to skip here just a minute. Would you please look at verse 6 here? Maybe I shouldn't skip all of it yet. We better read 5 too, and then 6. But when 6 is read, Mr. Odegaard, would you mind reading that 5 and 6, please?
And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the Son of Man had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all have one language. And this is only only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them.
Now, isn't that surprising? First of all, they think it's so great, but it isn't really so great, because the Lord has to, in order to look at it, he has to come all the way down like a giant to look at what the ants are doing down there. It isn't so big either. It doesn't even get to heaven, you see that? So he says, come down, we'll look down. So he says in verse 6, they are all one people, they have all one language. This is only the beginning of what they will do. There is... Now some people think this is irony, that God has his tongue in his cheek when he says it. They think that they will succeed in this. And some scholars think this is like Psalm 2, verse 9. He that sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord has them in derision when people are foolish. You see that? I don't believe that. I think the Lord is very serious. These creatures are nasty. Didn't he say before the flood, I'm sorry I made them? And here they're just going off the deep end. And didn't he say when he drove Adam and Eve out of the garden, he said, behold, humans have become like God, knowing good and evil, didn't it? And therefore he drove them out. Here you have the same thing. This is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible. So now, Mr. Elgard, you have to read two more verses. You have to finish your section.
Should I start at 7 again?
7, yeah. 7. Yes, okay. So, I think the Lord is quite serious here. I think human beings have the capacity to emancipate themselves and to live on their own. Now that doesn't mean God doesn't exist, and it doesn't mean that God isn't going to do to human beings what he does here. What does he do here to these emancipated people who think they can get up into God's realm and they can make a name for themselves and not be scattered together, hold this all together in their own city? What does he do?
He
doesn't, you know, have an earthquake knock that thing down or something like that. He simply confuses their languages. Mm-hmm. Why does he do it this way? He could have done it other ways. I mean, guess, just why do you think he does it this way?
Doesn't destroy anything.
Pardon?
Doesn't destroy anything.
No, he lets people live, isn't it? He respects his creatures. Shouldn't have made us, but now that he's got us, he's got to live with us. That's what it seems to be. So if they don't understand each other, well, you've been in foreign language, in countries where you can't understand, it's tough, isn't it? And even if you know a little of it, you don't know it proficiently, you can't really get it across.
Isn't that a little problem now in Arabia?
Sure. We don't understand. They have a different set of values. You see that?
Yeah, that's right.
That's why I say vocabulary is a different set of values, a different vocabulary. You see, they speak in a different way. And we don't always take the time to understand them, see? Well, here you've got confusion. I'll confuse their tongues. One of my professors said, they asked for bricks and they sent up bananas. They didn't get that one. I don't know how that was, but you can imagine how they have trouble building that city and keeping it going. So I think that's maybe the way it is. Anyway, so he scattered them abroad and they left off building the city. So the city is never completed. You see that? That's why that artist was really nice. I don't know if he painted for maybe some big palace or some place like that. It's now in the Spanish Museum. And I have a slide for my students, and we can just kind of flip it on and the people see it, you know. I don't happen to have that slide here, and we don't just have it lined up here. But that artist really, with imagination, understood it. That city is never going to be completed. It's going to remain uncompleted. We have all kinds of big projects. I suppose one of the big projects that we'll perhaps go in, and I'm really not against it. I'm not against a nuclear investigation. One of them would be space programs, isn't it? Do you have a comment? No, okay. I'm not against this. When people would go to the moon, you remember people were a little divided about that? You heard people say it, didn't you, that they shouldn't be going?
They didn't believe it. Said it
wasn't. That's right, yeah. I remember preaching in Chicago, and I often had to preach in German, because the German preachers were very few and far between, so I had to supply preaching. And I don't like to preach for the simple reason that I'm not a pastor living with the people through all their troubles. I'm a professor, and people like a professor, but you can't live from professors. You have to have people who live right with you. You see that ups and downs and all this. So I preached on, I think it was Jeremiah 7, and an old man, German man came, it was a German service at the end, and he said, yeah, that was nice, but what you should have applied to is this terrible thing that they want to send people to the moon, and that is godless. And I had to be honest to him. I said, that in itself I don't think is wrong. maybe we should use our money in a different way, and there will be ways of talking about it, like Nixon and other people that are wrong, but I think by itself it isn't wrong. But I do know this, you all remember that they flew around, the first time when they went up there was Christmas time, and they flew around the moon and came back, wasn't it? And then they gave Genesis 1, a message of creation, because they saw the earth from way out there, and they said, God is the creator of all things. First time we saw the earth from outside, wasn't it? We have pictures of it. And that was marvelous. But the second time, it was a Sunday. Don't you remember that? And again, I had to preach in the south part of Chicago someplace. And I had to preach morning, all morning, 8 o'clock English, and I think 11 English, but then a German service in the middle. And in that first service, I said, I can't preach on the gospel. Everybody's talking about landing on the moon. What can I preach on? Spacemen. So I chose this. I chose this. And in that first service, when I read it, there was a Chicago policeman. He was in his uniform already, ready to go to work. But he and his wife sat right in front, in the first front pew. And when I read this, and it said, if this is only the beginning of what they'll do, and nothing that they propose will now be impossible for them. That policeman's eyes just popped. I can still remember that. He was amazed that the Bible would say that. I never talked with him about it. I suppose when he left the church, he shook my hand and all this and that. But I preached about it kind of the way I'm talking about this now, that we can get a nail on the head on this too. You see that? Of course, at that point, we didn't know that those guys would make it, did we?
No.
And whether they'd step out and what would what it would be, we found out it's part of God's creation. and it was rocks and so forth. But at that point, we didn't know what we were getting into. And we still don't know. There were a few more wild ideas about Mars than we have now, isn't it? But now we do find that we really have to take care of this planet. And it's not going to be so easy to go off into outer space and after we've messed up our nest here and polluted everything, and then we can make it unbelievable that we can go off there. We find that we're going to have to face our own problems, you see that. But coming back to this verse now, this last part, I do think that human beings have the capacity to live without God. They can live atheistically. They still are human, you see that? This is not the final end of what, according to the scripture, God has, but God made that big risk when he created human beings. And they are co-creators, and they will create atomic bombs, they'll create spaceships, they'll create all kinds of things. And as I said, it was wrong to build, make bricks or the city, or anything like that. But when they imagine that they can exceed their limits, be like God, make a name for themselves. I think that's the ideal. With its peak in the heavens, that's what the Hebrew really says, then God says no. So the unity of humans all over the world is dependent on something, our relationship to our Creator. And we'll have a good relationship with nations, peoples, and even the results of our technological breakthroughs if we know that we are creatures. Once we know and imagine that we're not, and we can do anything we want, then God controls history. And what does He do? Send a flood? or in this case, what? Send division. So what you talked about here and referred to the fact that we don't understand each other, it used to be, and still is, the French didn't like the Germans. Now they have to live with them after all these wars and the economic European. And the Germans would make little fists. The little boys would learn the history from their teachers to fight the French, wasn't it? Yeah. And we've had a lot of that. I think it's humankind hasn't begun to be what it should be. And so, how does the whole thing end? Let's see, I don't know your name. Way in the back there, verse 9. Would you read that?
Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth.
And yes. To put that in the etymology, it was called Babel because there he babbled all their tongues, because the word Babel. Actually, in Akkadian, which is the language, Bab Ilan means the gate of the god. See, they had one of these big ziggurats, these temple towers, and there's a staircase, and on top of it is a shrine where you worship the god Marduk, the city god, and that's where his temple is. And that's the microcosm of the big universe that Marduk ran. But the Israelites, they make fun of the Babylonians, and they say, sure, they think that they're the world city, the capital city of the world, of the united world. It's Confusion City. So they called it Confusion City because their God confused. That was the first instance of what God does. And the last sentence then, please, would you read that too?
And from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth.
Yes. So it ends up the way I kind of put it here on the board, with deuced unity. And I suppose that's my interpretation here, that that's the bitter medicine that keeps us whole. And I think we can stand anything but prosperity as humans. And if we live in affluence, or think we can live in affluence and can live that way, it's not necessarily good for us. And here to live, it was nice for me to grow up in northern Wisconsin and in a very stable community. I'm glad I grew up that way with united values. But I had to also be, the process of socialization had to go on with Ralph Gerke, that he found that the world is bigger, and that wars would reach into northern Wisconsin and crises would reach in, and even Saddam Hussein's marching over the border has a tremendous influence on the American economy system, isn't it? Isn't it surprising that just marching over that border would knock the stock market down? It was wobbly enough the way it was, and that this would happen. And the Bible finally says, who does this makes for also disunity? God. One of those students said it was kind of tough to hear it, that God is not only the creator, He's also the destroyer. He did this, not just for the sake of destroying, but at the flood He did it, didn't He? And I'm sorry I made them. And in order to keep His creation, He had to what? Bring the great judgment. And God does bring judgments. So I guess we have a crime and punishment story here. Well, we haven't finished everything. We have a few minutes yet. We have more time than we usually have, which is good because it's our last session. And we can have some conversation about this. Anyone like to ask any questions? There may be still some questions. LSU must have some questions. Is it all clear?
Well, I was just thinking of when you used the word destroyer, that in the Hindu religion...
Yes, the Hindu religion has the god Vishnu.
The,
yes.
The creator and the preserver and the destroyer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Shiva. They would have it as three separate gods.
Yes.
Whereas we have a very complicated God who also has feelings, who, it repenteth me that I have made man to live on the earth, because he has filled it with violence, isn't it? You're sorry that he created us. And it grieves him in his heart, you see. I think we have that God is not just a statue, or a God of the philosophers who is merely a concept that is rational. But that God is the living God, the living reality, if you might say it that way. And that he is acts. And he acts in order to, what? Keep his humans human. And I think he'll do that. So I don't know what this means with space exploration. Do you think the United States is going to let NASA do anything after all these things that have happened?
They just won't get any passengers to go up.
They won't get any passengers. For a while, everybody wanted to go, isn't it?
Right.
No, I don't know. And it'll cost a fortune, even then. Well, any comments about anything we've been having here? This story, other stories? What happens now after all these nations go out in a spread abroad, and in the chapter we didn't discuss, chapter 10, it's God's good will that they should be spread all over the face of the earth, from one end to the other, from the Eskimos way up in the north and their lifestyle, and that's good. They have their own language and their own cultures, and that's good. And then abroad here, but at the same time, when they think that they can, well, take the place of God, be like God, and go beyond there, then God just doesn't allow that, that's all. But he's forced, you might say, to do things that he perhaps doesn't want to. We've been real nice for Ralph Gehrke to live all of his life in that little village up in northern Wisconsin. But even that little village, wars touch it, and economic things touch it, and you can't keep on living there, so you're scattered abroad. You live everywhere. Yes?
I've always had a question that I suppose it's just a simple question, but I've always wondered how, after the flood, when it was only Noah and his family, how did the earth become peopled with so many people in such a short time?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, two answers. One is, again, as I said rather provocatively, paleontologists, and they're getting a lot of evidence from all over the world today, might answer your question in historical and a scientific manner by simply giving evidence of the spread of peoples, you see that, over the various continents. And that would be one answer. Here, I think we have master stories that we can't just put on a time and a space line, that Noah is really not only a historical person who lived way back when, but he is also, at the same time, every human being that lives through catastrophe. You see that, what I'm getting at? That we have a different type of writing. Can I tell you something like this is a comparison? I got it from Willem Fischer in a book I read many, many, many years ago. I thought he was right. He said, our history writing takes events the way a man who makes wine takes grapes. And out of those individual grapes makes wine. And so we write our own histories to see that from our viewpoints. But the stories in Genesis 1 to 11, Willem Fischer says, are a distillation of the wine so that you make brandy out of that wine and a liqueur. You have the essence, it still comes from the wine, but it's been refined. And it's a different way of history. So I don't think that the biblical account as we have in Genesis 1 and 11 would give us a continuous, let's say, time and space location of each one of these events. Mm-hmm. That's why I rather provocatively said it tells us about things that never really just happened that way according to modern science and, mm-hmm. and history, but that what was happening in all events that ever did happen and still do happen and will happen. Do you see what I'm getting at? It's in a sense like a parable. You see that Jesus would tell a wonderful story, and what would Jesus through the story? We'll have one Sunday gospel tell us the real realities of the kingdom of God. You see that? Sometimes the story could be about something that happened historically, but some of Jesus' parables are just example stories. You see that? But that means that they're true. In fact, an example story like that, a made-up story, fiction, could be truer than actual history that we read in a newspaper. Do you see what I'm getting at? That the Holy Ghost can inspire also such a story, I would certainly agree. So there were many such stories in the ancient world. We call them master stories, myths. They were usually polytheistic. These, I'm quite sure, are inspired by the Holy Spirit and are monotheistic and are given us the final answer of these master stories. So I can read and I know these other stories about the Babylonian story of creation, or I know the Babylonian story of the flood, or we have stories. Do you know any ancient stories? Some of you know Greek mythology. Didn't they have stories in Greek mythology that though the Mount Olympus was their highest mountain, you see that, the gods lived up there, but that other people tried to get there. Mm-hmm. They were called Titans, and Prometheus was one of them, with the help of the giants, and then he piled us on Pelion to try to get there. And we know African people have such stories that they would make towers that would go that far. And I think humans try to go beyond their limitations. If we want space exploration, or even exploration, don't even scientists gather together internationally in order to have scientific programs? Business will internationally get together, you see that. Politicians try to do it, United Nations. We try very often to do such things. And so I think that that's the way I would kind of look at it for us today. Mm-hmm. But your question is a very good question. Did I answer it a bit? Mm-hmm. Okay. Things that we have to talk about many times.
Is there any indication in the Bible that someday in the very distant future man will again return to one language?
Well, people have tried it, you know, with Esperanto. The trouble is that that's a very sophisticated sort of thing, and it lacks the culture and the infrastructure of a culture. Right. You see that?
Yeah, it seems to me that among the intellectuals, slowly they're working towards one language so that mm-hmm. they can all work together.
Yeah.
Possibly not all the way down to the common everyday language, but mm-hmm. the language of scholars perhaps. But
well, I think in the computer age, you know, we have, you know, getting, will we have thinking machines? That would go even a step farther, talking machines mm-hmm. and translating machines. They're getting a mm-hmm. little farther there. You're asking something important. I think for the religious aspect of it, and it's good that you raised that question, for the Christian church since Pentecost, and everyone, you remember on Pentecost, do we not all hear, each one in his own language, the wonderful deeds of God? In other words, the Holy Ghost uses all languages. And that's why we don't really bother whether we have other translations. We don't say that even though Greek was the original language of the New Testament, that everyone has to learn Greek. You see that? I think that we have translations and good ones. Now, for a scholar, if you want to go back historically to the original, I have to know Greek. Or I won't give me my position as a biblical scholar or Hebrew. And that's right. But whether we would actually all be speaking one language, I think we'll have to go to heaven. If you want answers to that, do you know C.S. Lewis, this wonderful writer? Well, he has a number of stories, not only the children Narnia stories, but some of you may know his spaceship stories, Perelandra. Anyone know that? He tells stories in order to make us think about, from Christian terms, because he is a Christian. He had left his faith for a while, but he came back to it and spent a good share of his last life in writing many, many things. Perelandra is about, is science fiction baptized in the Christian faith. And he speculates about the past and about the future. One of his is called The Great Divorce, about heaven, the divorce between heaven and earth. And in that sort of language, we can kind of feel toward it. Now, I like what you're saying in this sense, from a Christian's viewpoint, that if the risen Christ is already in that new age that Jesus, that he, as Jesus, proclaimed when he was on earth, and he is drawing all human beings to that, will there be unity? I think there will. That we will understand each other. In a way, we understand each other through the gospel now, because the gospel is not bound by language or by tradition. That's why I think in our creed, someone asked me the other day about that word Catholic. We still have it, even in our translation in the LBW, the Catholic Church. There's one universal church, you see that. That does includes the Roman Catholic Church, but does not just exclusively refer to that. So I think that, in a sense, we can talk to one another. And as you know, there are other barriers even when we talk the same language. But eventually, whether we as human beings will, under the beneficent blessing of God, become better than we are, I hope that. Whether that will include a common language, it may well be. Well, I think our time is almost up. Anyone else would like to talk to me? Someone asked me about tapes. There are tapes of this lecture. Not that I'll have some of them. I don't like to always listen to them because I know how much I miss or where I didn't say what I should have or said it poorly. But there are tapes. And there's a tape library. You asked me about that, and I think I told you the tape library is down at the end here. And you go through the B's, A and B's, and you get to the G's, and you'll see a bunch of them there. Some of that I had other times when I was here at Holden, including one on chapter 10, which you didn't get this time. So if you want to learn all those 70 nations that are in chapter 10, I don't know who wants to learn it, but I did my homework, and I try to do that. I have completed quite a bit of study on this, and I'd like to, but it hasn't appeared. I'd like to publish a book on it, but a very popular book. The first one I read was too complicated, you see that? And I've been teaching. I usually have sometimes 100 students a semester. Well, if I do my duty toward them, I don't have a lot of time to be writing. So I hope now that in my retirement I'll have a little time for that. But it's really been nice to meet all of you. I think you're almost all from this one group, aren't you?
Heavens.
Yeah, isn't that marvelous? Well, it's good to get to know you. I'll miss you. Hope you'll have a good stay here, but you won't stay much longer. You go back on
Sunday.
Well, that's tomorrow, isn't it?
No.
You missed a day.
Pardon?
You missed a day.
Today is Friday.
Today is Friday.
Today is Friday. Oh, you're going back on
Sunday.
Oh, yes, excuse me. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A little mixed up. Well, thank you.